This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The federal government has just announced the launch of an online consultation about national security. According to the website at Public Safety Canada, the insight of Canadians will help inform the development of future legislation, policies, and programs. Recent dramatic changes to our national security landscape, such as Bill C-51, need to be addressed, along with our longstanding deficits in transparency and accountability. To help prompt the discussion and debate, the federal government has published a 75-page downloadable green paper meant to provide background information. But according to Michael Vaughan, the green paper reads like a draft from a public relations firm meant to sell the current state of unaccountable powers. Michael Vaughan is a lawyer and policy director at the BC Civil Liberties Association. She's currently writing a series of blog posts about the government's national security consultation. The aim of this blog is to create a different shade of green paper meant to help Canadians interested in submitting their own contributions to the national security debate. And Michael Vaughan joins us by phone from her home in Vancouver. Hello, Michael.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you back. What areas of national security does the federal government want to review?
Well, here's the thing. It is a review of national security writ large. They say everything about Bill C-51 they're prepared to talk about and interested in hearing our views on, but really every component of national security, including our oversight mechanisms and everything that predated C-51. Many national security programs and agencies, of course, were problematic or concerning or lacking appropriate transparency long before Bill C-51. All of it is on the table.
Wow, that's certainly a big package of things to get our heads around.
It is, and I think part of the real danger here is that we are going to end up having a conversation about everything and nothing. Because Bill C-51 was so concerning, it does end up being, for many people, the primary focus of the things that they would like to see addressed. And the notion that we should speak more broadly about national security seems so helpful at the outset to actually posit this in the context of the broader framework, but it really has, as I say, put us in danger of really not getting at some of the most problematic aspects.
Now, while they were in opposition, the Liberals promised to amend the legislation when they got into power, Bill C-51. How does this consultation fit into that?
Well, it's really difficult to say. I mean, the basic concern here is that there is an opportunity to go for so-called quick wins, to do a little bit of tweaking for Bill C-51, because the political cost of being seen to repeal that bill, should anything happen on the national security front in the interim, they will be blamed for it. So it's a politically unpalpable thing to do. And yet, we do need wholesale reform. Bill C-51 was flawed in every possible guise. So, you know, what could we see coming out of the national security consultation? We need to let the government know that there is a public pressure and momentum for significant, serious, foundational reform, not the tweaking that will be so very, very tantalizing to them on the political front.
Now, the latest post in your series discusses the expanded role of CSIS. What is it about the agency's new powers that's so troubling?
CSIS, of course, were our domestic spies, and I use the past tense because they had a mandate that coming out of the McDonald Commission to do security intelligence gathering and dissemination. CSIS has been fundamentally recast as not only our intelligence body, but the body that now has the powers to do active disruption. So that really looks for most people like the powers of a secret police. The kinds of things that the government said they might do are things like disrupt communications, change websites, disrupt financial interactions, etc. Those kinds of things, you might say, that threat disruption notion, when there's a threat to the national security, would properly reside with the police, not with a body that is shrouded in secrecy that we can almost never get the appropriate transparency for. And in other guises, like the UK, where you have a comparable body like MI5, what you have is them working in concert with the police using the regular law. What C51 did was give CSIS the powers to work outside of the police using extraordinary law. And that is problematic.
So this was an integral part of that bill, C51, that expanded those powers of CSIS.
It absolutely was. And it was probably, when you may recall, thousands of people took to the streets in opposition to Bill C-51. It was the top-of-mind issue, was the new expanded CSIS powers, along with the Security of Canada Information Sharing Act, which was the new expanded surveillance powers for all of federal government.
Now, we have a no-fly list now that more closely resembles the United States program. Can you take me on a little tour of that no-fly list?
Sure. A no-fly list, which Canada has had since 2007, is essentially a watch list where you're trying to keep people off of airplanes who you believe present a certain threat to aviation security. Watch lists are inherently problematic. They are problematic because they are an executive or bureaucratic determination that doesn't involve any evidence by an impartial adjudicator to affect your rights. And the notion of a watch list, essentially, because it's a bureaucratic process, is that they tend to become bloated because nobody wants to take any names off the list. They only want to put names on. There is no penalty for all of the false positives who land up there. There's only concern about whether or not that they miss anybody. So inevitably, they become bloated with names that should not be on the list. We've seen the problem with watch lists the world over, and instead of addressing the problems that we've always had, Bill C-51 exacerbated them. Now, when you are on the Canadian no-fly list, your ability to get off of that list you're hampered in even a greater measure than you were prior to that bill being enacted. So what we have now is, if you are on the list, nobody is supposed to tell you if you are. You're in Kafka land. You have 3 months in which you can appeal to the government to do something about the fact that you cannot fly, and they can ignore you for 3 months. Ignoring you for 3 months means, no, we agree that you shouldn't be flying. Then you can go to federal court on a judicial review, get yourself lawyered up, and try to get yourself off the list, but it's a secret trial and they don't actually have to tell you what the evidence is against you. That is no kind of process. In addition to which, all of this may be happening while you are out of the country. And in that point, you are definitely imperiled. And this is the kind of situation that we see in the newspaper as of this week, someone who can't come home to Canada because they are on the U.S. no-fly list. These are obviously direly, securely imperiling for the individual in question, and we have done nothing to address these concerns.
I'm guessing that this is not spelled out in the government's green paper.
Ah, well, this is a very good point, because in the government's green paper, if you read it, the worst thing that happens when you get yourself embroiled on one of these watch lists is that you might be irksomely delayed at an airport. And part of what we are trying to address is that the peril of an individual is much greater than that. You could be stranded in a foreign country, vaguely tainted as a potential terrorist. That is really what's at issue here. We agree there are some people who are irksomely delayed, but is that the rights issue that is at the pointy end of the stick? Not at all. And so that's why we are putting out more information in as an auxiliary to the Green Paper so that people can have a better view of what is at issue when we discuss these matters.
So we've talked about CSIS and we've talked about the no-fly list. What other concerns with the Fed's green paper do you have?
Well, what I'm going to be talking about on Monday, because the Public Safety Committee is now on a tour of five Canadian cities where they are taking testimony, expert testimony, and hearing from the public, what I am going to be discussing with them is the Security of Canada Information Sharing Act. And this is almost a mind-bogglingly overbroad law that was introduced. Part of Bill C-51 was to allow the federal government to very, very freely share information for national security purposes. The Security of Canada Information Sharing Act, we've never seen anything like it in Canada, in part because what they say is national security for the purposes of the act, concerns about national security, is so broad that there's almost nothing it couldn't include. It includes much more than what we think of as public safety. It includes aspects of public life, things that undermine the security of Canada in this new definition that is unique to Canadian law, can include ordinary public life like the administration of justice or the financial or economic stability of the country. So when you look at this, you say, wow, this could include just about everything, and the government has given themselves carte blanche to share our personal information with security agencies on the basis of this completely unique definition of national security in Canada. What's going to happen? What's going to happen is a series of databases are going to land up with our personal information at CSIS, for example, or the RCMP, and are going to be vetted and probably result in the kind of profiling that we know, again, is not only not effective for the purposes of public safety, but will be a massive incursion on people's rights. That's the bottom line, and we need to get the government to understand that this is something the public cares about.
How can people contribute to the consultation?
At this point, again, I'm very concerned that people are going to say, I'm no expert on national security, I have nothing to offer. Oh, yes, you do. We have never seen this kind of consultation before, and it's imperative that people who have feelings about what the balance should be and what the government should be doing weigh in, even if it's one paragraph, even if it's just the thing you care about. There, on our website, we will take you to either the online form that the government has, or you can simply email with whatever you'd like to say about that. In addition, you could come to the meeting on Monday, as I say, expert panel in the afternoon. But the evening meeting from 5:30 to 7:30 is a public meeting. It is open mic. If you get there with your ID and you register, you may be able to get to the mic and tell the Public Safety Committee what your concerns are as an ordinary citizen who needs to know that they are both safe and safe to have their rights protected.
And how can people get the information about where that meeting is if they missed it?
If they missed it, go to our website. We've got it there. So we're at bccla.org. And on our national security page, we give you the lowdown on where the meetings are happening across the country. And as I say, please don't be deterred if you feel like you're not a national security expert. Almost no one is, but we all have a stake in this game because it affects us all.
Thank you so much, Michael. Thanks so much for talking to us again this morning.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Michael Vaughan. She's policy director of the BC Civil Liberties Association. To contribute to the federal government's national security consultation, you can go to publicsafety.gc.ca. And to read Michael Vaughan's blog series or to get information about when the public consultations are, you can go to the website of the BC Civil Liberties Association, and that's bccla.org.